we're ready to start now. Let's finish this shift.
I need to talk to you.
What? Okay. Very good.
We're ready.
We've got the flight director, Jerry Griffin, and the Capcom, Dr. Carl Hennies. Jerry, do you want to summarize the ship?
Okay, really all we've done today that's had the least bit of dynamic quality to it was the EVA, which I'm sure you followed on the television. That went right by the numbers, and as a matter of fact, Al took a lot less time to get out and get the cassettes and get them back in than we really expected. He also did a very good job of looking over the sim bay for us and answering some questions that we had regarding the V over H sensor and the panoramic camera, and the mass spec boom also had given us an indication it wasn't fully retracted, which he confirmed by his observations. Also, we verified, and as you could plainly see in the television picture, the mapping camera was indeed still extended with the cover open. And we don't know what has caused that hang up. From Al's inspection, it was hard to tell that there was anything wrong. Now, when we get back, if I suspect that when the people sit down and debrief him in detail, he may be able to tell them something that might give them a clue. But for right now, we don't know why that mapping camera did not retract on the last retraction cycle. It was tried several times. The repressurization was normal. We did end up with a little more pressure in that ops bottle that was used for repressurizing than we would like to have in there. And the plan is that we will deplete that by dumping some of that pressure into the command module tonight, and then tomorrow night we'll dump the rest of it into the command module in order to get rid of the rest of the pressure in that ops bottle. That's about all I've... Carl, you think anything else significant that went on? I think that's about all we did, really. We did a lot of talking about the sim bay in a debriefing fashion, and that was more or less to try to get a leg up on the debriefing of that operation, because, as you know, Al didn't have a camera with him to take pictures, so we wanted to, while it was fresh on his mind, to get those questions to him. And that's why we did, that sounded a little bit like a post-flight debriefing, but that's why we did that, because we didn't have anything to keep a permanent record on that. Anything else?
I can't think of anything more exciting than the EVA today. No.
Okay.
Question.
Are we doing microphones today?
Doing microphones today, yeah.
I wanted to ask whether you'd had any advices to whether
there was usable X-ray data from this pointing experiment they did this afternoon, pointing toward Scorpio and Cygnus. Have you got any advices to whether that was good?
I didn't check that before I left. Did you, Carl? It's probably going to take a while, I would suspect, to look at that data in a lot of detail.
I didn't go by the experiment room after working today, but I noticed with great interest we were pointing at Cygnus X-ray 1, for instance, and beforehand I talked with the experimenter quite a bit about his use of his equipment for this astronomical or cosmic work, and he felt quite confident that the signal levels were going to be plenty high for them to detect, so this will be very interesting data for us.
Over here.
To what extent was the camera, the mapping camera, extended, and what is the purpose of the camera being extended?
It was fully extended, and I think there's an 18-inch extension, and in order to get the I can't tell you exactly why the geometry of the mapping camera correct. It must do that, but yes, and in order to get the geometry of the field of view correct, then I must do that.
I think I've got a good answer for that, Jerry. There's at right angles to the main mapping camera, there is a stutter camera that photographs the star field on every frame so that they know precisely the attitude at which the picture was taken. And you, since this is at right angles, you have to put the whole structure out so that you can see out at right angles.
Or it would be in the field of view. So, But it's an 18-inch extension, and then from what Al said, it sounded like it's out all the way.
It seemed to be completely out, yeah.
Yes.
Stu Auerbach right here in the front row, and we'll go back.
Jerry, for curiosity, why are the photographs, TV photographs that came back from the moon so much sharper than the ones that we're getting from space, from the spacecraft?
You talking about television?
Yeah.
Did you say TV?
Yeah.
I noticed a little bit of fuzziness there in the picture quality, and the biggest explanation I might have is possibly the ground antenna, and that was something I was going to check on and didn't do. It was slightly degraded, and I suspect we were on an 85-foot site there. We didn't have a 210.
I don't think we did.
And that's where you see the big improvement is when you go to that big dish on the ground.
Jerry, how does that camera extension out there affect your RCS firing plan, if any?
It does have an effect in that we are going to inhibit the two thrusters that impinge on that mapping camera. We're going to inhibit those for the remainder of the flight. The reason that we're going to do that is because, not because of the damage it might do in the mapping camera, but there is an unknown quantity about what the plume does when it hits there, which way it goes. So as a result, we're going to inhibit it just a minute. We don't really need those jets. It won't affect anything.
Which ones are they?
It's A2 and B1. Is that right, Carl? I think it's A2 and B1. And we're just going to inhibit those for the remainder of the flight.
Question right here.
Jerry, right now there are two rather large film cassettes, rock boxes, and other material in that spacecraft. Could you give us some idea of just how crowded it is in there?
Yeah, it's pretty crowded. If you look in your flight plan, as a matter of fact, it'll show you what the nominal storage plan is. And it may not have a picture in it, so it may not tell you much, but it is crowded with the film cassettes. You must remember we also have an ops bottle. We got space suits and helmets. We got rock bags. And it's crowded. It's, I don't know, maybe Carl's been through that storage, but
it's like the good old Gemini days. Before they got all this new stuff on board, they had room underneath the couch to sleep, and they had room in the LEB to move around, and that is just packed full now. All they've got is really their couches. All the rest is full of junk, although it's not, it's valuable junk, mind you, but it's full.
Brett Turner?
Dave and Jim sound pretty droopy. Has a surgeon gotten any indication they may not be feeling well or anything? Might be just on the droopy side with those two particularly in the last 2 days.
Well, the impression I had was that they sounded good, better today than they did yesterday.
Horse,
yeah, I think everybody, Rhett, that's exposed to that oxygen environment for that long tends to get dry throat and gets a little bit hoarse. I noticed Al is showing signs of that now, and I think that's just we've seen that in every space flight we've ever had. And I thought that both Dave and Jim sounded more rested to me today than they have. Yeah, you sound kind of droopy.
Yeah. I am. But surgeon, stuff to surgeon looks good, huh?
Yeah. As far as I know, we haven't even discussed it, so it must look pretty good.
he stayed out a very short time, only 16 minutes, I gather. Were you surprised at how much he was able to do in such a short time? And did you give him any instructions to maybe stay a little longer and give us a few quotes or anything?
No.
I told him to take his time once.
Yes, and as a matter of fact, it did surprise me that he was able to do it as fast as he did. But I think that's probably because of two reasons. One is, as you all recall that have followed it, we learn an awful lot in Gemini about zero G EVAs. We learn that you have to have the proper hand restraint or hand holds, and you have to be trained for it in a way that you tend to kind of relax and go with it. Well, I think Al did an excellent job of getting himself ready for this flight. He did a lot of underwater training. He did a lot of zero-G aircraft training. And then I think it's a lot individual dependent as well. I think some guys just have an easier time at that than other people. Training certainly makes a big difference. I think Al it was just a piece of cake for him. He also said he enjoyed it. Obvious, after being confined in the command module for as long as he has been, it probably felt good to get out and really stretch out a little bit. So I think that it's somewhat individual dependent, and I think the training that Al did really put him in good shape to do that EVA. It did surprise me that he got out there and got all that done as quickly as he did. And we didn't tell him to get back in. We were ready for him to stay out as long as he wanted. Well, maybe not that long, but we were ready for him to stay out a while longer, and he just decided to get back in, so we let him.
He mentioned something about being able to see the moon behind Irwin. Has there been any word as to whether he saw Earth, or was it impossible to see Earth from the angle he was?
Probably not. He passed through an angle where he could have seen it, but the moon, I guess the Earth is a very small crescent to them now, and he didn't mention it, and we haven't asked him whether he saw it or not. So that's an unknown. Don't know whether he did or not.
Are you going to attempt to bring back that rover camera to life to shoot the solar eclipse tomorrow?
No, I think we've got firm confirmation now that camera has had it. We did a little experiment. I'm not sure anybody has briefed you on it, where we transmitted from the ground S-band and looked for a VHF return, actually the same way we do that biostatic test. And that was a no-go. The Stanford people did not see any return from it, so that indicates the transmitter is not transmitting at all. So we're convinced now that the camera is gone, and no, we aren't going to try to do anything else with it. We will ask the crew tomorrow about the end of their press. It's about the end of their press conference, I think. We're going to ask them if they can see the Earth. We're going to ask them to point that at the Earth at the end of that TV press conference.
Point that camera?
Yes, the TV camera.
Brad Turner.
That was Scott who saw the moon behind Worden, wasn't it?
Mm. That was Al that could see it behind Irwin as he was standing in the hatch.
Are there any theories as to what happened to the TV camera?
Yes. There's a lot of theories. I guess the heat could have possibly gotten to the whole system or to the batteries. I think probably what the best analysis will tell us is that it was a transmitter failure causing a short that either caused a circuit breaker to open or just a circuit breaker opening, maybe due to a circuit breaker problem. But a problem in the transmitter itself is probably the most likely explanation.
Glenn Johnson had a question if you're on the front row.
I just wondered what the latest plans were for other photography of the eclipse. Are they going to just use onboard cameras besides the television camera? Have there been any changes in the previous?
No, that same plan, Glenn, is going to be done, and we are going to add this television look-see.
Anything else? Okay, this announcement, the one I'd read, is Houston Metro Airlines has no scheduled flights from Clear Lake City to Houston Intercontinental on Saturday afternoon or Sunday mornings. Should the demand warrant, Metro may operate flights on August 7th following splashdown and on Sunday morning, August 8th. Anyone interested in the service, please contact the airline ticket office, room 130, building 2, extension 4495. An airline representative will be available in Building 1 immediately following splashdown for as long as assistance is required. Thank you.